Hello and welcome to the Water Cooler, the NATO Association's intern-run podcast. We recorded one podcast already 4 weeks ago, and we liked it so much we waited a month for another one.
I think we've learned from our mistakes.
Yeah, Emma, who's here today, gave us a lot of notes and she criticized us. So now it's going to be great now.
Yeah.
I'm David. I'm obviously an intern with the NATO Association. I'm the program editor for Culture, Society, and Security. With me today is.
I'm Emma. I'm the program editor for Emerging Security.
And also?
William. I'm the program editor for Trade, Security, and the Economy.
So today we're going to be talking about climate change and specifically how far government should go to address the issue of climate change. I guess as background, we've all recently written articles about climate change that are very similar to each other. So
we really just should have written one article. That
yeah,
wouldn't be much.
But we didn't.
They're that similar.
Okay, well, don't contradict me on the podcast. Anyway, I guess we'll get started pretty immediately. I do just want to say, though, as a disclaimer, we all do accept the science of climate change. I know that can sometimes be a debate, but we basically go by what the UN has said on the subject and that it is real and it is a serious issue. So if you want not that podcast, this might not be for you, but otherwise,
you
yes.
You shouldn't want that podcast.
No. Like we go by the science. Everything we say is true all the time. So on that note, I'll start by just asking, are current governments doing enough to combat climate change?
It's a good question.
Thanks, Luke.
I think the short answer is no, they're not doing enough to combat climate change. We've seen quite a few efforts, most recently the Paris Agreement. But in reality, these have taken some steps. It's not going to be enough to keep warming to, 2%, which I think the...
1.5%.
So I think, no, more efforts need to be taken.
I also think the Paris Agreement isn't necessarily working because the only way that governments can actually address climate change is if they work in a collective nature and governments aren't following with the actual Paris Agreement. And I think like most countries are able to recognize that climate change is happening, and if they can't, that's another issue. But yeah, I just think people, like governments, have to work in a more cohesive nature in order for it to be like truly addressed.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you said that because that's the topic of the podcast.
Okay, cool.
So off of that, what areas of climate change or climate security have you highlighted during your time at the NATO Association that you think require more attention by governments?
I've highlighted more so the effects of refugees that come from climate change. So I wrote an article that comes out today, actually, so you should check that out.
Wow. Today being Thursday?
Yeah, today being Thursday, the 25th. And it basically just talks about how climate change makes people very susceptible to issues.
Sorry, cut you off. I was reading something by Elizabeth Warren, and I think the term that she cited that the Pentagon uses is that it really, and I think this is what you're writing about, it's a threat multiplier, right? So these existing issues that would happen without climate change are exacerbated by climate change.
Yeah.
So, and David, you wrote something about that, correct?
I did, yeah. I wrote a climate security article about a month ago, I think maybe a little longer, that was focusing more on Canadian, like how Canada addresses climate security as a topic. And we have Operation Lentus, which is based off of relief when climate emergencies do happen. But yeah, I guess you guys have written a bit more about like the wider things that will happen.
And then I did an article a couple weeks back on climate change in Nigeria and kind of how it led to refugees and then extremism too, with the rise of Boko Haram. So there's like so many different dimensions to it, and climate change just basically like escalates everything.
And the scary part is the countries, or at least the general consensus is the countries that it's going to affect most severely are the ones that are in the worst position to actually take care of it, and are also not in a position really to implement reforms in their own countries.
And they're also not the ones that are really causing it. Like if you look at it, it's like Western countries that are
I remember the UN, one of the UN's reports where they were like, it's a big deal. It was basically saying that it'll affect poor people in like, food and water insecure countries far more and far before than it'll affect anyone else. So you know, a lot of the people causing climate change, like maybe like larger like corporations, mm-hmm. CEOs, aren't going to be impacted by like 2050.
No.
But on the other hand, regions like the Lake Chad region, which I know you wrote about, yeah. is like, because water is drying up fast and there's rapid desertification, which I think
yeah.
is a bit of a dumb word, but
desertification.
Yeah, yeah, because of that, they're going to be, if they're affected right now, but
yeah.
it's hard for, or not hard, people don't care necessarily.
Well, that's also the only water that they really have to
yeah.
rely on, whereas in Canada, we're very grateful to
yeah,
have.
We have the most lakes of anyone, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's a problem, apparently,
yeah.
because of that.
I can agree on
I'm
that.
Happy we've
yeah.
established that.
Do you guys have some examples of policies or policy proposals that have existed or that you've thought of yourselves that you think should be adopted by nations and by governments?
Well, obviously, one of the more pertinent ones is the Green New Deal,
mm-hmm.
Right, which made a lot of headlines when it was proposed. So I think the Green New Deal, if we can just focus on that for a second, is it's ambitious, but I think there's also quite a lot of flaws with it. That's not to say that it's not good, but I was, if you look at the Green New Deal, compared to like most legislative bills, you wouldn't want to read them. You can read the Green New Deal, which is kind of worrisome. It's only like 11 pages. So anything that is that ambitious and only 11 pages is kind of scary to me, at least. It doesn't go into nearly enough detail. That's not to say it's not good. But yeah,
I think my opinion on the Green New Deal, and as a background, we were originally going to do a podcast on the Green New Deal, so if we talk about it a lot, that's why. But I think that you're right, a lot of it doesn't necessarily make sense realistically. I think it's kind of an aspirational proposal, and it is non-binding, although it hasn't passed and it probably won't. But it would be worrying if the people who authored it would want exactly what it says. But it's very broad and very sweeping. But I think the interesting thing about it is that when it was introduced, like, it was widely dismissed by, I guess, the main political authorities, not necessarily just Trump, but like,
yeah.
you know, Democratic leadership, mainstream news sources, as sort of like pie in the sky.
Because it's very like idealistic kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But despite that, when you now look at the slate of Democratic candidates, most of them have said that they like support the
yeah.
ideas of the Green New Deal and they abide by the Green New Deal. And so, well, I don't think we'll ever get legislation. This is the Green New Deal and it's passing right now. We're going to do everything it says. I think that when you compare discussions about climate change under Trump, but even under Obama, it's a lot more urgent now. And I think a large part of that is people who are willing to make a big deal out of it, even if it's not necessarily like strict policy. I think the idea of it actually goes a long way.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what there is to take from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think as actual policy proposals, there's really nothing there, but it kind of just does a good job bringing attention to climate change and kind of setting the balls in motion. So no one's actually, or at least I hope no one's saying, you know what, this is going to be like our 5-year plan, but if it can raise awareness and kind of spur other more specific things,
and
then I think
goals,
it's
yeah.
a success. The one thing though, I think, is that climate change, I think that the issue with the Green New Deal is that it kind of reinforces the partisan divide in the US. And until some efforts made to combat that, I don't think any progress is going to be made. Climate change needs to be viewed as, and this goes without saying, like a bipartisan supported issue. And until that, I don't think we're really going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I don't think that it should be looked at as only, like, I think it would be possible. But yeah, due to, like, the huge partisan divide in the U.S., it's obviously more difficult to implement a policy that, like, most Republicans don't agree with, or, like, the majority, I guess.
Right.
But, I don't know, I think there are, like, parts of it that are very, like, a lot of the things are very specific. Like, it's asking for just like transportation, like fixing the transportation industry, like that's fairly specific. Like energy efficiency. And I think a lot of this stuff is like things that most people can agree on, like would be helpful to combat climate change. I think it's only the last one where it says healthcare, housing, security, clean water, and air, and healthy food in nature. That's like obviously a huge, like, bundle of things, and then that also kind of ties in, like, Medicare for All, which is another topic that maybe we could do another podcast on. But it's kind of like, I think the one thing that is really good about the Green New Deal is that it kind of puts the government in charge of a lot of these issues. So being like, these are happening and it is the government's job to kind of step in and like do something about it.
I also think you raise a good point that it's like, it shouldn't just be viewed as like climate change, that there's a lot of other things
that
feed into it.
The other thing about it is that like the Green New Deal is like used to address climate change and then also economic inequality. So those are both like huge issues.
Yeah. The policy I was going to bring up going off of that is Elizabeth Warren, who is, I guess, known for her policy plans. Her environmental policy is unique amongst the Democratic candidates and I guess like leaders in general, in that it doesn't just address environmental protections and climate change as like one silo. It approaches it through a bunch of other avenues. Right now, I think she has three, which is she says she'll address money and politics and corruption.
I think that's a huge point.
Which is a huge one, because when you look at the amount, let alone oil, which is a huge contributor, but coal in America, which is widely outdated, but is still like
more
disproportionately.
More people work at Disney World than coal, than in coal business.
That's a really good point.
Disney World pass,
Disney World solves climate change, question mark?
Yeah.
That's going to be her title.
Well, also just like lobbying in general in climate change is crazy. Like even like in the last like 2016 election, oil companies spent like over $100 million dollars on
amounts.
Like lobbying. So that's like Chevron, Exxon Mobil.
Yeah. And then like there's so many other ways to tackle it. Like Warren goes into how it's also a security problem, so you can like, I guess as we've all written about, you can treat it as a security threat.
Totally.
But then also look at how ways you can, without compromising security, like look at the pollution that the army puts out, which, or the military, I shouldn't say the army.
Yeah.
And then you can also, you can look at it as like, there are a lot of proposals as to how you would restructure economies to make it like carbon friendly or like zero emissions.
I don't know if some of the ones that they outline in the Green New Deal though are where we can actually make much ground. Like they say we're gonna re-outfit every building so it's green friendly.
Well, that's the other thing. Like the US has a lot of buildings. Like obviously like that, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one, that was the one thing that a lot of like people were kind of pointing out.
But I do think as we said, the Green New Deal is aspirational, but I think Warren in general has been pretty good about finding ways to pay for her policies.
Definitely.
But off of that, this is, I guess, very U.S.-centric, but the Democrats, since, I guess, Clinton, have had a system called PAYGO, which is where for every policy they enact, they have to have a way of balancing it out so it's budget neutral.
I didn't know that.
It's good in some ways, especially because when Clinton was in office, he was trying to balance the budget, but I think the problem with that is that it ignores that a lot of economic policies you might pass are investments in your economy. So electrification of buildings is obviously a very broad topic that's not going to get addressed immediately. But when you look at the possibility of introducing power generators in just some areas or in governmental facilities or investing more in solar or all of these technological steps that you can take to make things more environmentally friendly, that also creates jobs in manufacturing and installing plants.
And you have to view it as an investment. Like there will be...
Exactly.
It's going to pay dividends in the end. But I think for that to work, you need to get people on board with the idea. And I'm not sure if people are there now. Like the polling shows that like most millennials or a large percentage of millennials would view climate change as the number one issue, which I think is fair. But they draw a parallel, obviously. Like it's an allusion to the New Deal, right? And I think it's kind of not unfair, but inaccurate, because when the New Deal came about, there was this sense of urgency. There was a sense of urgency around that we need change now. Like more than 30% of the people are unemployed. All these farmers are out of work. And people really were going to do just about anything to deal with it. So of course, something like the New Deal, very ambitious, worked. Climate change right now doesn't affect the average person in the United States life severely, and I think until that is kind of established, they're not going to be willing to make those long-term investments.
I do think it is affecting people's lives though. Like I think like it's obvious, like we're having a hot summer
and, and as we pointed out at the beginning of the podcast, it's also like it's people's lives literally in places like Africa.
Yeah,
I would also point out, in response to your New Deal point, I think it actually is a very good comparison. I just don't think that's being done well enough by politicians right now. Because when I do think it is, as we've said, it's an emergency, it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just hard to explain that to people. But as I was doing readings for our New Deal thing, which we didn't make, the point got brought up, which I thought was very good and which I hadn't thought of, which is that the New Deal was very improvisational. It wasn't as if Roosevelt got into office and was like, okay, we're doing this one big package that will solve the economy. There were hundreds of plans, that some of which immediately failed, some of which lasted decades, and some of which are now still in place, like Social Security, which all worked to solve the problem that was before them, and it addressed it in a variety of ways. Some of it was labor laws and union rights. Some of it was make work projects. Some of it was, you know, wider reforms on how government works and how banks work and how all of that works. And I think that when you look at climate change, the unfortunate reality, and I think it's being mostly propped up by people who oppose it, but it isn't being fought well enough, I think, by people who want to fight climate change, is that it's viewed as sort of this own bin where it's like, okay, we'll do everything that helps the economy and helps people, and then also we'll take a bunch of money and dump it into the climate change bin and hopefully that will solve it. When really I think you can take hundreds and hundreds of steps that are innovative and that can individually have net positive results and together fight climate change. I think that it could be a very, as Warren wants to do, it should be viewed from a variety of realms in which it would be like the New Deal.
When you're saying hundreds of small steps, what do you mean?
And big ones.
Yeah, what do you mean by a small step?
Well, I guess we had a conversation 2 days ago, William, about how much the military should be doing. And you brought up the point like, oh, I think that would hurt national security. But yes, if you literally took every single plane and every single warship.
Warboat's a better name, though.
It is the game, the board game. But I think if you took all of it and just immediately scrapped it and put in electric things, obviously that would be stupid and it wouldn't work. But you could, for example, look at every military base and say, how could we improve the environmental consciousness within this? Could we separate our garbage better? Could we introduce slowly power generators? Mm-hmm. Could we look at the ships we're buying
and
make sure...
That's not realistic. Why not?
I think it's also a good thing to look at climate change. Like, I think we're kind of talking about it from like a very specific like North American like point of view. I think the thing about it is that you can't actually address it unless everyone is on board with it.
Exactly, and so, in every realm of life as well.
Yeah, and like wherever, like we, like in Canada, we might not be like having like hurricanes and stuff like that,
right,
where like we're being directly affected by it, but we do, like, what is good is that we have news sources that shows us like there are a lot of countries that are being directly like hurt by it.
But I don't think that has instilled the level of like
urgency
that people think, like that's going to need to be established. So like with the military, for example, in an ideal world, totally we would take proactive steps so that we are making the military less fuel dependent. I think I saw a statistic that the U.S. military is like the 40th, would be equivalent to like the 40th largest country in the world.
55th.
And how much?
I told you that statistic.
I should have remembered that. And how much emissions they release.
It's
but it's a compromise. You're compromising, you're either going to increase the budget, move money from elsewhere, or take money away from other parts of the military to make it more eco-friendly.
I don't think you have to increase the budget. I think you have to kind of shift the budget.
That was the other one I said. I said move the budget.
Okay, I see. Sorry.
Yeah. But then I don't think people are going to want that right now.
I think it's more so just about, like, priorities.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, as we've established, we've all said they need to do more. Is what's the solution if you don't think anything can happen?
My opinion is that there needs to be much more money in research, and we should be looking at these big solutions, these big, ambitious solutions that can really make a dent into it. I think it's well and good to think, okay, we need to recycle stuff and turn off the tap. Well, that's not and do that, but...
Turn off the tap. Shorter showers.
We also need to focus. I don't have a lot of faith that we're actually going to make any progress that way. I read something in like the journal Science, right? Or I didn't read it. I read something about someone, from someone who'd read something in the journal Science about how if we plant like a billion trees, that will really kind of make a big step. And based off how much space there is on Earth, like look at Google Maps, there is enough space if we convert land that's currently used for grazing into that. I think solutions like that are stuff that we should consider, and we should make sure that scientists have the money so they can actually look at these sort of things.
I'm a little skeptical that if asking soldiers to put things in the recycling bill won't pass Congress, an attempt to turning all grazing fields
that's
into forests will pass.
Allow me to
ask you a couple questions, William, because this is, I think, the problem with the thought of, nothing will happen if we, try to pass these things. With the military, if, for example, you looked into whether you could install more, electrical generators into military bases, do you think that would immediately get shot down by the military, or would they be willing to look into that possibility?
I think it would get immediately shot down.
Really?
No pun intended, because it would make sense, so they can.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
They would literally shoot down generators.
But what hope do we have if we're saying the oil industry needs to go away, if our buildings need to be reformed, if all this needs to happen? If those steps aren't going to be taken, I don't think you can just depend on big science solutions to change things, because they need to be enacted. And I think you do it with small steps and with large ones, but if we're not willing to innovate, because with the New Deal, the entire one half of the government didn't want to do it. It's not like everyone was like, let's get on board with everything Roosevelt says.
But there people were desperate during the time.
But I'm saying,
people don't feel desperate right now.
But I think what you're missing,
we should feel desperate. We should. We absolutely should. But I don't think the average citizen in the U.S. wakes up in the morning and says, God, I hate climate change. I think they probably say, God, I wish I had more money so I could feed my kids, or so we could put a down payment down on a house. And I don't think until we kind of shift that narrative, we're going to make any progress. So I think the better question is, how are we going to make that urgency?
What we were talking about before, how we can't really have, how people aren't ready for a big step yet, how it's too, it's too much. So how having smaller steps, and also part of the Green New Deal, there is an economic element. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I do think, to the point I was making, I think it, on the part, to what you're saying, William, about it needs to be phrased differently, I think that politicians that want to make a difference need to phrase it differently. But I think that you can actually do that in really positive ways. When you look at, for example, money in politics, that's a big issue that people want to address. And every Democratic candidate in the debates make a big deal of saying, we need to take money out of politics. So it's also an issue. It's also something that's going to vastly help climate change, because if these politicians who are being paid for to basically prop up anything that oil or coal says no longer have that money, it's going to help the cause of climate change. And you're more likely to have politicians who are willing to consider these types of proposals. So if you don't just look at it as climate change will never get solved by politics, and rather say climate change is actually something that by solving it, we're going to make a lot of good changes as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot of proposals, not just off the strength of, I don't think Joe Schmo in Nowheresville, Kentucky is going to care about climate change, but actually say, these are the sweeping changes we're going to make that are going to help our country be better.
Yeah. So I think that's
sustainability is a good way to move forward. And I think that by just saying, no, we'll never pass anything related to climate change, you're ignoring the fact that actually a lot of climate change proposals are very, very good for the economy. Investments and its ways of making art.
I don't think everyone would agree with that. I don't think if you asked Mitch McConnell, he would say.
Well, but that's the problem with saying, will we ever get this? Will we ever get bipartisan support in Congress or even in Canada? No, I don't think we will. I don't think bipartisan has ever existed for nearly anything major.
This is why we need, it's all well and good to have democracy, but if we lived in a dictatorship, it would be so much easier to solve.
Disclaimer, William is joking there, because that wasn't clear.
Yes and no. Think about Singapore. Singapore's success, and I'll just go on a little tangent here, and the fact that they went from a third world country to a first world country in a matter of years was because they had a very well-educated and frankly reasonable dictator in charge of the country. And I think that there is, obviously dictatorships are bad, but there's actually something to learn from that. But we can go back to
I gotta say that the Net Association supports democracy.
In part of democracy is protecting people.
Exactly.
In part of the NATO Association, our mandate is to protect people. And it's known that climate change is harming people globally. So
yeah. And I mean
it's like a democracy.
there's the stat that more coal power plants, coal production facilities, I don't know, the places that make coal, more have been shut down under Trump than Obama. And it's not because Trump is some champion of climate change. It's because that's the way that the economy is going right now, because people are caring more. And also it just doesn't, it's not feasible anymore. But when you look at that, you have to realize that people are losing their jobs because of that, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the point against climate change, that by switching this, people are going to lose their jobs. So I think that the economically responsible thing to do would be to invest in more sustainable ways of producing power.
And we're so, making progress there. Like, we saw recently that and I'm going to get the terminology wrong, but the cost it took for, like, solar and wind is now becoming cheaper than
exactly.
other stuff. And I think that's where we can really make progress. When people see that they're going to have more money in their pocket because of these solutions, then they're going to get on board.
But that's economic policy. And it helps climate change. So surely that's exactly what Emma is saying.
Right, but I think it needs to be something that will have that short-term economic impact.
I read something recently, too, about nationalizing the oil companies. So I also, that's obviously...
I don't think that's going to happen.
It's not going to happen, but I just think, like, the thought of it would make sense. Like, if you take it out of private hands, like, that's a huge part of, like, government's issues, is that a lot of stuff happens...
Well, we have a fascist and a socialist on the podcast. I'll split the middle and say
that. I think we have a new title.
A fascist, a socialist, and David.
And David. I actually
the
like
weekly
that.
That's not
good.
Bad. I don't think it would sell very much. But it's
I think it would.
Do you think we're going to get advertisers if half of us are fascists and half of us are
It will be an interesting advertisement. The first advertisement break is going to be like some really right-wing newspaper. It's going to be some really left, and it will be a good exchange of ideas. It will be
This is getting way off the rails. I'll say this. I think we all do agree that it's a problem that needs to be addressed, right?
And governments aren't addressing it correctly.
As we've agreed on at the beginning.
Thank you,
Emma. Well, I think it's better to reinstate it, William.
I will say this, that despite our differences, which are much more apparent than I thought when we started this...
we're never going to talk to each other.
No, no. We're disbanding the NATO Association. But I do think it's good
internship.
That we all are passionate about it, and we all... have good intentions about solving climate change. And I think there's a lot of debate that's maybe destructive. I've talked about this in the office and also in arguing with my dad about the divisions within places like the Democratic Party of the US, where there's debates that sort of go about how should we do this, should we do this, blah, blah, blah. And in doing so, you sort of divide yourself. And in the meanwhile, people who are very clear about not caring about climate change, not caring about the science, not caring about the fact that, as Emma's pointed out, there are people dying right now because of it. I think that as long as you remember that people with good intention, people who actually do want to help the issues and therefore the people they affect, stick together, I think that it is actually, like, very achievable, in my opinion.
Yeah. I also think it's good to have debates and to talk about it, because you can kind of reflect on policies that you've read on, that you've kind of thought about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can think
partly
of the rest
why
of the
we're
do
here.
Things. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Thank God for
we
us
all
at the NATO
talking.
Association.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I think we're going to now have lunch and not
saving
take.
The world.
Yes.
I'm going to have something vegetarian for lunch.
I was going to say, I'm not going to get the plastic utensils.
Oh. I've been a vegetarian for 5 years.
Well, I'm a better
I guess
person
you're,
than all
yeah,
of us.
You're much better than us, Emma. Anyway, thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll have another one sooner than the last podcast. So have a nice day. Bye.